Hello and welcome to the Patent Pending Made Simple podcast. I'm your host, Summer Shaw, and with me is Jamie Brophy and a very special guest, Stephen Key. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm going to give our audience a quick introduction on you, Steve, but I'd love for you to elaborate on this. Stephen is a patent licensing expert, as I've come to know him. He's written several books about patent licensing, been through the process several times, written one of my favorite books called One Simple Idea, although there are others and some follow-ups to them. They're pretty great as well. Founder of InventRight, or co-founder of InventRight and Inventors Group of America. Yes. So, Stephen, with that introduction, welcome. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. First of all, I love intellectual property. I know we're going to talk about how to protect things and make it simple. I love that. But I'm just a simple guy that really had some ideas and didn't know what to do with them. I really wanted to be in business, but I'm not a business person. What do I know about business? But I wanted my ideas. I wanted people to see my ideas, and I wanted to create products that people really wanted. And I wanted to figure out, how can I get those ideas out there so people could purchase them and enjoy them? And so I just figured it out, a simple way to do that. And it's such a simple way that most people don't realize you can do this yourself. You can actually participate in the biggest game in the world of innovation. You can leverage your creativity and work with big companies and small companies. And it doesn't matter where you live or your particular income situation. I'm all about breaking down barriers so people to share their creativity with the world. But you have to do that with some smart intellectual property tools that we have out here. So I'm really glad that we're talking about it, because I think once you understand what some of the tools are and how to use those tools, you can play the biggest game in the world. So that's what I do. I come up with ideas and I show those ideas to companies. And if those companies like it, they rent or license those ideas for me, and they pay me a royalty for each and every one they sell. And I teach that now as well.
That's very cool. You've been a huge inspiration to us. We get inventors who call our office from time to time, and they're like, hey, I've come up with an idea. I want to patent it, and then I don't know what to do after that. And I'm like, huh. Maybe you should flip that equation, and maybe you should figure out what you want to do first, and then we can always come in and help you execute on those business plans. But I always say, and I learned this from you, Stephen, from reading your book, start with the end, start with your kind of business game plan first, and then IP and the legal stuff can come in and help you execute on those things and help you accomplish those goals. I think you've been a very helpful resource and an inspiration to the inventor community, and I'm really glad to have you and have you talk about some of these things.
Well, thank you for saying that. I think looking back, I was one of those individuals that I thought I had a great idea and someone said, you better patent that. And I really didn't know what that meant. And so I think a lot of us that have ideas, maybe we're watching Shark Tank on Friday nights, or maybe we've talked to a friend that doesn't know what to do. But for some reason, the first thing out of everybody's mouth is, you better patent that. I would like to look at it a little bit differently. You have a great idea. What are some of the steps I need to do to commercialize that idea? And slow it down a little bit and think and educate yourself a little bit. That's why there are people are listening to this podcast, or there's YouTube videos or books. Learn about the process, but don't let fear guide you to take these steps, like filing the patent too early, even when you don't really know what your goals are. It's all about education. It's all about knowing all the options that you have. But you're going to have to learn about some of the tools, like a provisional patent application or a trademark or copyright or all the little things that really add up to create that ownership of one of those ideas. I think it is important. I don't know if it's the first thing you need to do. I think the first thing I would do is just see if I have a new idea. And I think a lot of people just don't know that's really the first thing. They think they do. They haven't seen it before, but have you really looked? Have you spent time to look online, do a Google image search, Google shopping search, and just see if that idea exists? That's the first thing you should do. And keep looking. Don't ever stop. Just keep looking. You'll never find it all, of course. And I know a lot of people don't want to look too hard because they're afraid they're going to find it. So do yourself and look. Just keep on looking and looking and find your point of difference. That's really the first step. And then look for prior art. And there's ways to look at prior patents that have been issued and see if you really have something unique. But I always do the Google shopping and the Google image search first, because for me, the most important part is my idea on the market today. And if it isn't, and even if I now find a patent, I'm not worried about it, because there's a reason why that patent wasn't commercialized, and then I try to figure that out. But that's really the first step, is don't be fearful. Take a deep breath, find some really good people that can give you good advice, and search on the internet.
I think this is going to be great, because I think most of the clients, especially most of the clients that I deal with, are coming from exactly where Steven started out. Like, they have that creative brain. They have a great idea, but they get bogged down in, okay, now what do I do? Like, they get bogged down in the business details. This podcast that Summer and I have started deals with the patent side of things, but that's such a small piece of what inventors need to do. And oftentimes they come to us and they're not quite ready for a patent yet. So I think that's great advice, Steven, is to start out with the Google searching to see if something is already out there. So sometimes clients come to us and they just have a great idea, but they haven't developed it. You know, they don't know exactly how it's going to work or exactly what it's going to be made out of, things like that. So we usually tell them, go back, figure out some of those details, and then we'll talk about the patent side of things. So what else do you recommend that people do? You start with the search to see if your idea is already out there. If it's not, is that the next step, is to do some more product developing, or what would you do next?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have learned that if I want to stay in this game of coming up with ideas, that I'm going to probably need to come up with a lot of ideas. And I'm going to need to be able to test those ideas very quickly to see if anybody really wants them. Now, you have to realize what I like to do is license ideas to companies, which means I'm going to find a company that's already in business, that has the shelf space, the manufacturing, the marketing, distribution, the relationships with all the retailers, but they just need a good idea, right? So I like the licensing business model, especially for someone that's got a lot of ideas that maybe they don't want to do a startup. So that's what I like to do. But if I come up with an idea and I look online and I cannot find it, I'm pretty happy. That's a green light. Keep on moving forward now. I try to, and when I do that research, looking for similar ideas, right? I'm trying to find my idea. What I'm really looking at is ideas that are similar to it. And because I'm doing that, those might be the same companies I'm going to reach out to license or rent my idea. So it's a really great way of doing some homework first, right? So I'm looking on the internet. I don't find it, but I find similar ideas. So I make a note of those companies, and I realize I'm going to reach back out to those companies to see if there's some interest. Now, I do something a little bit differently than most people do. I love building prototypes. Trust me, who doesn't like to build a prototype? Who doesn't like? I love them so much. I build them. I put them by my bedstand at night. I love them so much. but I've learned it's what's really important. It's not the prototype. It's the benefit of that product. It's really the benefit. And so what I like to do, if I have a lot of ideas, and maybe I'm not good at building prototypes, because sometimes that's a barrier for people. How do I build it? What you can do is create a drawing or a 3D prototype, which is amazing today how great these 3D computer generated prototypes can look. They look real. And I can put that on a one page sell sheet. Here's my idea. This is a benefit of my idea. Maybe some features of my idea. That is a selling tool for me to show a company to see if there's interest. It's a really wonderful tool to test, right? Because to me, if I can show it to a company and there's interest, that gives me a green light to start building prototypes now and figuring it out. See, I do one little step to test a little bit because I could spend thousands of dollars on prototyping. And maybe it's too big, or maybe I've designed it the wrong way, or maybe no one even really wants it. Ugh. How many projects have I personally worked on that I loved and I thought everybody's going to love them, but the once I built the prototype, I filed the patent, I show it to a company, no one wants it. Okay. So what I'm trying to explain to everybody, yes, I love my ideas. I'm sure you love your ideas, but will people buy them? Will companies want them? So why don't we test a little bit, right? And so that's why I teach people to reach out to those companies that you have found that are similar to yours, pretty good fit. They sell this, not quite mine. Mine's a little bit different. I got a point of difference. Then I send them, I contact them and say, do you work with inventors? Not everybody does, but a lot of companies do because they embrace the word open innovation, meaning we want to see what you have. And when they do, that allows me to show them that sell sheet and see if there's interest. That's what I do a little bit ahead of building the prototypes. But don't get me wrong. Just me saying that is never going to stop anybody from building a prototype because they want to touch it and feel it, right? Everybody does. But if you have a lot of ideas, I think that's a great tool. And eventually, if you stay in this long enough, you will have relationships with companies. And you can call them up and say, hey, look, I've got this idea and here's the benefit of it. I want feedback right away.
Do you recommend that somebody have a provisional patent application in place before they contact companies? I think a lot of people get nervous about disclosing their ideas. Or how do you handle that? Do you just have a non-disclosure agreement?
That's a great question. I would always highly recommend filing a provisional patent application. Now, recognize you won't have all the details. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning, but it's going to give you a comfort level that you can show your idea to a company. The best protection is really finding companies that work with inventors. If you're fearful, find a company that's got a track record of working with inventors. They have an open innovation policy. They want those ideas. Provisional patent applications to me are the greatest tools on the planet because you can write it yourself. You might need some good guidance. Of course, I like them because it allows you to put a lot of stuff in there. You know, I can put the manufacturing that I think it might be made. I could put in workarounds and variations. I could put, it's like chicken soup. I could put all this stuff in there. I'm not quite sure what's going to work yet, but I can put it all in there and feel pretty comfortable to have patent pending status for 1 year to show my sell sheet to companies. See, so yes, I do agree, Jamie. I would recommend if you're starting out, if you really want a comfort level, file that provisional patent application. It's a great tool. I'm a big believer in it, and it forces you to really think about your idea. It forces you to think about what's the uniqueness, maybe how it's going to be used, why is it different from other products on the market? Maybe some variations, some workarounds. It forces you to develop your idea even further by thinking it through. Yeah, I think it's important.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of the provisional applications as well. And I feel like once you have that provisional application on file, that's when the real work starts. Then you have a year to do all this footwork, to contact those companies, to figure out if people are going to want it. That's your 1 year timeline. And it starts right when that application gets filed is when you need to do all that stuff. Yes. Do you figure out if people are going to want it? Is that something that you can do in that 1 year time frame?
I want to know the minute I come up with an idea, am I crazy or not? So that's why I wanted a testing mechanism. And that's why that sell sheet is a one-page advertisement of your product's benefits. Because if the benefits aren't strong enough, there's a very good chance they'll say, no, we're not interested. Or they'll go, hey, that's really interesting. Our customers have that problem. See, so to me, it's a really simple testing mechanism. And companies can see it right away and get a good response. Pass, I like it, tell me more. What you might even include, if you want to go an extra step, is do a one video. And that would show a problem, solution, maybe have a rough prototype. They really love to see that. Now, you have to recognize if there's interest, the first thing they're going to want to see is a prototype. It's coming. What I mentioned earlier is, when do I make the prototype, right? If there's interest, they're going to say, we want to see proof of concept. That happens pretty quickly. The next question I have is, what type of prototype do you need? Because there's many different types of prototypes. So I'm always testing along the way to make good decisions. That's the whole process. If I spend all this money on filing patents, building prototypes, starting companies, I'm doing all this, and I don't even know if anybody wants it, how many times can I fail before I'm going to give up? So the strategy here is to test ideas, test the benefit of ideas, use tools like provisional patent applications, sell sheets, 1-minute videos to test a little bit. And if there's interest, then you start to build that working prototype, right? How many do you need? What's it going to be for? So it allows me to gauge it and spend money slowly through the process a little bit. That's what it does. So that way you can stay in the game longer, test out more of your ideas, and hopefully you find one that just, I've told someone the other day, you want ideas that roll down the hill. You don't want ideas where you have to push up a hill, right? And there's a big difference. Once you know the difference, you'll start to look at your ideas a little bit differently and look at where some of the obstacles are. But you really want those ideas that catches someone's attention really, very quickly. It has a wow factor. It can be easily manufactured. They get it. No education. And you can test those type of things with the one-page sell sheet and not even build a prototype, because it could be a 3D computer-generated sample. That's what we're finding today. In fact, this is going to be very surprising. There's a project I'm working on now to one of the largest beverage companies in the world. No prototype. You're like, you got to be kidding. No, because the video was so powerful. It was so engaging. They saw the benefit clearly. They didn't need a prototype. In fact, their attitude is, we'll just make the prototype. We'll pay for the prototype. So yeah. I'm always about producing very compelling reasons why this might be of interest to you and your clients or your customers. And I do that. It's always testing, Jamie, I think, a little bit here. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to build that prototype. And then the day, you might have to file another provisional patent application. Maybe you don't have all the information. I always tell everybody, the first one's great. There's a good chance you're going to file another one, right? Because once there's interest, then I go, oh, okay, let's go look at it again. Then I cover it, because I'm going to get feedback from companies too. So maybe I'm not quite sure how to manufacture it yet. So a lot of people are very concerned. Do I know exactly how to build it and manufacture it? No. I'm concerned if the benefit's big enough to maybe go learn that stuff. And then once I learn it, then I put it back in another provisional patent application.
That makes a ton of sense, Stephen. And I think that's what I've appreciated about your process, is that you're always testing. By definition, if you're inventing something, you don't have an idea, or you don't know how the public at large is going to react to it or respond to it. And it goes back to your first point, right? It's like doing that Google search to see what people are purchasing already and what are they dissatisfied about this product. In the marketing world, I think they say like features versus benefit, right? Like you can talk about the features of your product, or you can talk about the benefits of your product. And the benefits is the one that sells the product, right? People are buying a product to solve a problem, not because it has X, Y, and Z features, right? That's not how human beings will make purchase decisions. So you've already gotten started in this mindset of benefits, right? Which is already going to help you, you know, weed out a lot of bad ideas, right? Because you can come up with cool features and be like, oh, I'm going to patent this and market it. It doesn't work that way. That's not going to work well. But if it has strong benefits, it will. And then you kind of circle that back up with your second point, which is that you're always testing, right? You're seeing who wants to take the next step with this product, who's interested, who wants to maybe have some skin in the game from a prototyping perspective. These are all just ways of testing your hypothesis that this is a cool invention that has a market.
Yeah, there's something you said I think is really important. I don't think a lot of people understand the difference between features and benefits. I might patent a feature, but if I don't protect the benefit, maybe I've missed the whole boat. I do believe once you've tested that benefit, it's going to help you when you go to a non-provisional patent application to really tell that patent agent or your patent attorney what's really important. See, I don't think you're going to know that at the very beginning. And how many applications have I filed where I was wrong? Later, it's like, gee, I didn't see that. I didn't get the feedback. I wasn't talking enough to people and really understanding what was important to them. I missed it a little bit. Or there's one particular part of it that was really important I didn't put in there because I didn't know that was important. So I think with that type of information, I can go back now when I want to file a non-provision patent application to tell whoever I'm working with that's going to help me do that, this is what I need. I need that claim to match this benefit or this feature. I need that claim. And I like to see it. I always tell, when I see an application, show me the claims and let me see if I can match it with my business objective. Oh, boy, they match. Because how many people file a patent that don't even understand what the patent, what it really says? They're a little complicated, I have to admit. Sometimes I have to read them repeatedly myself to understand what is this thing. But if it's written...
We do too, so you're not alone.
If it's really written well, maybe I have a chance of understanding it the first time I read it. I just tell, match what I need with the claim so I can see it. That way I go, that's why I know I nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah, and we talk about that all the time when we write patent applications with our clients. We always say, hey, tell me what are the benefits, right? What are the benefits? And you obviously can't, you know, patent benefits, but what we like to do is think about what are all the features that enable you to access the benefit, right? And then we want to file a patent on those features. Because a lot of times, like, you could file a patent on a huge number of features potentially, but if they're not giving you access to the end benefit, then that patent has missed the mark, right? You haven't done a good job on that patent. I think it's really important for inventors to have that understanding, but to convey that to their practitioners and for the practitioners to take that information and really capture and corner the benefit, right? Because that's a valuable patent. A patent that's just focused on features is potentially going to miss the mark sometimes.
Here's another thing that I do that, because I mentioned that a lot of people think patents are there to protect myself, which they can, the right tools. I like to look at them as removing arguments. How can I write them to remove arguments? And what I mean by that, the first argument I'm going to have is a company saying, why am I paying you for this idea? And if I write it in such a way that I include certain things, and I can talk about that in a minute, but I write it in such a way that they look at it and they look at it. It's written such a way, it has so much information there. They just say, okay, because they don't know if it's going to be issued or not, but it's done in such a way, it's a very good selling tool for why you should pay me. Because that's the first question they always have. Steve, there's something similar out there. Why are we paying you? So I really know my point of difference. The second argument is that, will it issue? Come on, Steve, it's not really an issue. If I write it in such a way with enough details, there's a very good chance that patent examiner is going to issue this. Because I can put a level of detail in there about the manufacturing and other stuff that I'm pretty clear I can get a patent on it. Okay. Or one feature of, or one point, or one part of that because of the manufacturing. And then if it ever gets where people want a litigation situation, and I saw this because I sued a little company, Lego, years back, and I realized...
All lawsuit, no big deal.
Just small little company. I realized that patents are just words to be interpreted at different times by different people. But some of the techniques that I used, they couldn't get around some of the words. Right. And if you write it in such a way, you can overcome arguments. And how do you do that? It's really simple in my mind. You write about the problem and the solution. Okay. I got it. I always include a lot of manufacturing. And so what I do is that I'm not a manufacturing expert, but that's why I specialize in, but I know how to find the right people that are. And I find people that are in that particular field and I have them sign an NDA with work for hire language so they can help me figure it out, but they don't own it. I still own it. So I can find the most efficient way something could be done. I use that information from someone that's in the field. He has more information than I would ever have, more information than any patent examiner is ever going to have, to tell you the truth. So they provide that information for me, which is really great. Then I also ask him and myself how can I steal it from myself? Because
I love that.
There's some really smart people out there that are going to try to reverse engineer what I have. Just like Lego, they did the same thing. They tried to reverse engineer it. Okay, so by doing that, now I've got workarounds. So no one can work around me. I got variations. So once I've added all this together and a lot of drawings or pictures are worth 1,000 words. I love them. And they're a great selling tool. So when I add all this together in a provisional patent application, when you see it, you're like, no one knows. They can't interpret it because there's so much there that companies just say, okay. Because no one from those departments, from manufacturing to legal, knows all of it. And because when you put it this way, it's how to get deals done. So they're selling tools. And then when that goes to a non-provisional patent application, you pick and choose the things you need. There's just a strategy that I've used. Now, this, for simple ideas, I don't think you need to go to that degree. Okay, great. But if you're really working on ideas that have big potential, you believe, you're working with big companies, that you need to really think it through, right? And get some help. I mean, you can't do it by yourself. You're going to need to get some help. And once you do that, then you're providing enough good information to that patent attorney or the patent agent where they can do a great job for you because they're only as good as the information you're providing. So there's a really simple strategy to this. I think that a lot of entrepreneurs and startups should probably think about really knowing more about their IP, knowing more about their intellectual property, knowing more about their point of difference, knowing more about what the market's saying. So they really file some really great stuff.
You're using the provisional patent application as a tool to protect your idea while you do all this, contact the companies and do all your research. My next question would be, at what point do you analyze the patentability of your idea? And how important do you think that the patent is? Because we've had some clients come to us where we tell them it's going to be really difficult to get a patent on this. It's a great idea, but it might not be possible to get a patent on it. So I guess how important do you think that patent piece is to getting a product to market?
I don't think it's as important as people think it is. I think it's important. But there's other things I think that are just as important. When it comes to just getting a deal, if I have an application that's done extremely well, but I put the right team together, the know-how, experience, it takes away risk. So I don't think it's just a patent. I think people are fooled. I think you go into a situation where you built a right team and a company can look at it and they're confident to go forward with it. Right. So I think you wrap your IP with your team and knowledge. I think that's a much stronger approach than just a patent. I've signed licensing agreements that have nothing to do with the IP I filed. It had to do with my team. It had to do with knowledge. It had to do with a lot of other stuff that had nothing with patents. Because at the end of the day, those are arguments. And sometimes you're going to be suing people when do, and that's just a messy thing. But here's the other thing I think is really important. When I created this one technology, it was a rotating label. I was in a Procter & Gamble meeting. The president and CEO of Procter & Gamble saw my technology and says, come on out, show my technical group your great technology. So I went out there and I didn't really know what to expect. I was just so pleased that someone wanted it. So I went out there and they had their whole team was there and I had my marketing person there and my manufacturing there. And I gave this quick presentation. And there's about 30 people in the room from Procter & Gamble. And they slid this piece of paper across the table. And they said, Mr. Key, we're not going to pay one penny for this idea. And they all walked out. And I didn't know what that piece of paper, I didn't know what it meant. So I looked at it and had all these numbers, whether patent numbers, prior art. So I sent it over to my attorneys and they said, Steve, we did a prior art search. We didn't find anything, but they found your idea. You're not the inventor. In fact, it's been invented by two people 50 years ago. And not only a little bit like your idea, exactly your idea. I started thinking about this, that why would they invite me out to embarrass me? Why would the CEO love it? Why would people saying that they love this idea? But why was I going to let prior patents stop me from going forward? And what I realized when I read that patent, there was no method of manufacturing. So today, that technology, we sold 500 million labels. I have 20 patents on that technology. Someone told me I'd never get a patent on. So I'm really careful when people say that, because I think you can always find something to give you some perceived ownership. You just have to look at it from a business perspective a little bit. Because if there's a patent out there, prior art, but it's not on the market, there's a reason why. Mm-hmm. I tried to find the reason why, and then I filed that. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful when someone says that's not patentable. Maybe yes, maybe no. I think right. We have to dig a little bit deeper. And I think then at that point, find that point of difference. You might have to change it, tweak it, change it. Have to do some more homework, but then wrap some really good people around it, your know-how, wrap it around it. But I love when they ask me that too. I love in a meeting when they say, Steve, why are we paying you? There's prior art on this. I love when they ask that question, because then I come back and say, look, of course there's prior art. There's prior art on everything out there. But have you seen my idea on the market? Well, no. And that's what we're filing on. The difference between that prior art and my idea that you're looking at today. And that difference is how we figured out how we're going to bring it to market. And they always say, I get it.
I love it. I've said this to Jamie and I've said this to our audience ad nauseum. So they're familiar with this, but I always tell people that, hey, a prior art search is just an indicator, right? You can spend a few $1,000s on a prior art search. It'll give you an idea, but it is not an exhaustive, definitive answer to your question. So I used to do high stakes litigation work at a very large corporate law firm in Silicon Valley. And we've taken cases to trial, spent tens of millions of dollars on a litigation. And in every case that I took to trial or did work up on a litigation, our clients spent easily over $100,000 on a prior art search. So if you want that level of certainty and you want to know for sure, then you can spend that kind of money, right? And then you'll know, maybe. But yeah.
It's really interesting about that. Patent examiners they do a limited amount of searching. If you ever get in a litigation situation, they're going to do a lot of prior art searching. I think you do just enough for me to see where some of the landmines are, right? I don't need to know all the landmines, some of the big ones that just appear. And that kind of gives me an idea of where I need to maybe skirt around it or maybe change a little bit or find that uniqueness I wasn't really thinking about. It just gives me some knowledge of history of what happened. I like it. To me, it's like the history of something. And I really want that, because I hate to be in a meeting when they pull some of that up, and I know it exists, but I don't go crazy on it. Trust me. And you can't, I don't do that. I'd rather look in the market first. But I do the prior art because it does tell me. But I'm never going to let it stop. What stops me is my product on the market. That will stop me. But it will never stop me because there's a prior patent. Never.
Yeah, I think this is really helpful, Stephen. One of the things that I always preach, and again, I've said this 100 times over, is that we have a framework for writing a patent application. And all of the things that you're saying is actually it fits in really nicely with the framework that we have, because it helps us explain some of these things. When we write a patent, we always think about it like a Russian nesting doll, right? So we want to start with a kernel of an idea, right? Which is really the feature set that enable you to access your benefit statement. And then we say, okay, which one of these feature sets can we live without, right? So what we do is we want to write up that invention. And then we say, what can we live without? So we just remove those components and we write up the invention again. It's a little bit broader now. And then we say, okay, what's left? What are the different ways of manufacturing or accessing this feature set? We write it up again. And then we say, okay, what's left? How can somebody create an alternative, right? What are alternative to these things? Or what are some alternative ways to access the same benefit set? And we write up the invention again. And then we say, okay, what's left? How can we expand the scope of coverage using broader terminology and words? And we write it up again. So we'll end up writing the whole invention 4 or 5 times in a document to allow us to get a lot of coverage on that piece of paper, which is, it sounds exactly like what you're describing, right? It's like, yeah, you want to figure out all these things and all the legwork and dump it into the patent document because it's a marketing tool, right? I always think about it as a litigation tool, but it's the same thing. You're selling to a jury or a judge as opposed to a licensing person on the other side.
Well, I'm really glad you said that. I don't know if everybody does that, right? I think that approach is showing a level of care to provide something that has value. I don't know if you're going to find that from everybody, right? And that takes a lot more work, a lot more thinking. I like that you're saying that because I do think it's to really create a patent that has value today. You have to do. You do. And if you're not, you're going to have a patent that's not worth anything. And I know a lot of patents that have been issued probably aren't that valuable, to tell you the truth, because they haven't done that level of detail. That's why it is a teamwork when you work with your patent attorney, patent agents, teamwork. And you can only expect them to do so much given their time. So that's why I'm saying, like, you need to collect some of this information and make it easier for someone, right? To take that information and write it in such a way that's going to give you the protection you're looking for. So it's really teamwork here. Yeah. And without that type of teamwork, you're probably going to regret it, or it's not going to be marketable, or for some reason there's going to be workarounds. The situation with Lego, there was two words. They couldn't get around two words, and those two words were in there for workarounds. It was really thought about. It was thought out before we filed it. So that type of knowledge ahead of the game, you know, is allowing you to feel confident going forward.
Yeah, I think this has been really helpful. Thank you so much for joining us today, Stephen. I have so many more questions, but I think we're out of time. We don't want to take up too much of your time.
Well, thank you. And I'm really glad you're bringing up these important things. I think they need to be talked about more. And I think more people need to understand the process. And I'm glad that you're sharing that and doing it at a higher level than most of the people that I see out there that are providing the service, but they're not explaining it this way. And they're not asking the inventor to help provide that information or question that information. I'm just not seeing it. So I'm really glad that you're doing that and providing that type of valuable service to people. Congratulations on that. It's good.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
And we appreciate you. We'll have to have you come back again and talk more of these things, but we appreciate all the value you've given us personally and to the inventor community. It's been really great. Thanks, Stephen.
Well, thank you very much for having
me. Thank you. Thank you for joining us on the Patent Pending Made Simple podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you'd like to receive updates, view the show notes, or access a direct link to any resource, go to the episodes page on patentpendingmadesimple.com. To help others find our podcast, please like, share, and subscribe. Thanks again for tuning in. I look forward to having you with us next time on Patent Pending Made Simple. This podcast has been hosted by Outlier Patent Attorneys and is not intended to, nor does it create, the attorney-client privilege between our hosts, guests, or any listener for any reason. The content of this podcast should not be interpreted as legal advice. All thoughts and opinions expressed herein are only those from which they came.